Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 328, Slow Down and Stitch. Sunday, June 16th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post photographs, show notes, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: news and events, the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. Hello and welcome. I am recording early Sunday morning from Yinhu Chaiyuan, my home near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. It has been a beautiful weekend here with very low humidity, sunshine, some breezes, some big puffy clouds, and we had a half inch of rain on Friday night, which makes me a lot more settled, I suppose, about the heat wave that is coming. I have been trying to get outside and enjoy this weather as much as possible. I estimate it has been 100 hours of weeding and ground care here, but that is complete, and it's time to enjoy the gardens and the outdoors and just do some maintenance tasks and think about areas that I still would like to plant. The bird life has been amazing here. We have nesting cardinals and nesting Carolina wrens. Yesterday, the cardinals fledged, and it was just a really wonderful day listening to all the activity in the yard. I was not the only one to be attentive, though. There are two fox kits who have been coming around here, and I know that because yesterday I actually saw them both at the same time. I just thought I was seeing one fox very frequently too close to the road, but it turns out two. So they were hanging around. They had something dead in the woods, and then that brought all of the crows. So it was animal kingdom around here on Saturday afternoon. Today it's a little bit quieter, so we'll see how it goes with the cardinal fledges, and then I think the wrens are yet to fledge. They are actually nesting inside a mason jar, inside a piece of pottery that is on a little table on my porch. So they got really close with this nesting season. As I mentioned in my previous episode, I had a goal this summer of listing some hand stitching classes, which I will be conducting at Orange Coffee Art Music in Delaware Water Gap, which is just about 5 minutes from my home. And I have managed to come up with all my class concepts and get them listed on Eventbrite. So I want to just tell you a little bit about them in case you are in the area or you will be in the area and one of these interests you. I'll be teaching a reverse applique class on July 9th, a needlebook class on July 22nd, and this will include materials for the needlebook that are botanically dyed by Tony of Ramble and Roots. She is a nearby resident also. We got to meet during Cal Patch's mending class, and I'm very excited that she will be providing the special materials to make this needlebook an heirloom quality item. And finally, I have listed a hand-sewn shirt class, August 5th through 7th. These are daytime classes. The first two are, you know, one course, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and the hand-sewn shirt is 3 days. We will go from pattern making and cutting your pattern from your main fabric through all of the hand stitching, hand finishing techniques. We'll talk meditative stitching. We'll talk using a thimble and different kinds of needles and thread. That course is really comprehensive. All classes come with a kit of sorts. For the needle book, it's pretty complete for materials. And for the others, there's a listing of what is provided in the kit and what participants are expected to bring. All class sizes are small, and they take place in a beautiful, brightly lit space at Orange and include a morning beverage. You can certainly message me if you have questions, but I'm very, very excited about offering these courses in this space and honoring hand stitching, which has been important to me for quite a while, but which I've been engaging in even more intently over the past year or so. That's Slow Down and Stitch courses at Orange. This podcast is possible in part by supporters on my Ko-fi site. I'm so grateful for all of those supporters, and as a token of my appreciation, each quarter I offer up different prizes. I will be drawing and announcing those prizes in the next episode, so there's still time to make a contribution and get yourself in the running for these prizes if they interest you. So let me just remind you about them, and I have an update also. One prize is from Woolen Waves. Sarah Ellis of Woolen Waves can create custom socks, and the winner of this prize will receive a pair of custom-made socks from Sarah. I will link the Woolen Waves Handmade Socks and More website in this episode. In addition to selling products online, Sarah and her mother also appear at festivals and events. The next one is Beats, Bites, and Brews at the John Carlisle Park in Alexandria, Virginia. And that takes place on July 27th from 11 to 6 p.m. It sounds like a really cool drinking and shopping opportunity if you're in the area. So custom socks from Woolen Waves. That's drawing number one. Drawing number two is a skein of Granville sock yarn that is milled and spun at Battenkill Fibers in Greenwich, New York. The last time I talked, I said the winner would have their choice of different colors and dyeing options. However, Battenkill sold so much Granville sock yarn at Maryland Sheep and Wool that the winner will be awarded the one skein that has been retained. It's in a beautiful teal color, and it will be sent to you, and I will add to that, since you don't get your choice of colors, I will add to that a skein, a full skein and a mini of self-striping sock yarn from Knit Spin Farm in the Kohlrabi colorway. This is beautiful green, purple, and white, and this is from my own stash. So the winner of the second drawing will receive 2 skeins of sock yarn. All you have to do to get in the running is to become a contributing member or make a one-time contribution on Ko-fi. There are links for that on my Instagram page as well as the website page yarnsatyinhu.com. Thanks so much and good luck. May was a whirlwind of activity and excitement as I celebrated my 50th birthday and hosted the Art of Fiber show at Orange, featuring 10 different artists from New Jersey and Pennsylvania, all with incredibly different ways of working with fiber. And the opening night was just a really wonderful bash. It was so great to see so many friends, family, and people who are interested in fiber and the fiber arts. So I am so grateful for all the artists who showed their work and for everyone who turned out to lend their support and show their interest. It was just amazing. The opening was followed by a wonderful mending workshop that was facilitated by Cal Patch, and the participants came and learned 3 different styles of mending. We just had a wonderful morning at Orange, learning and stitching and chatting together and keeping things out of landfills. In June, I have tried to kind of restart my motivation on different kinds of knitting and sewing and spinning projects. I really kind of took a pause in May and worked toward other goals, not necessarily the project goals that I typically have. Since the beginning of June, I have completed a pair of socks that I've had on my needle since January. They are in a combination of yarns from Knitspin Farms, beautiful self-striping yarn that was shared with me by Emily. And I've knit a rather long in the cuff pair of socks that will be a gift. And since I didn't have enough yarn in one colorway for both of these socks, I pretty much knit each sock in a different colorway, but then I did the heels and toes in the other colorway to make them look like a matching pair, sort of like a fraternal twins pair. I have posted a photograph of these socks on my Ravelry page as well as on the episode page for this podcast, so you can take a look. Another project I've been working on is cleaning and carding some Carrie Hill fleece that was a gift sent to me by Emily. She obtained a Carrie Hill fleece at the 2023 Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival and sent me a small portion of it, enough for a small project. And I did the cleaning of this fiber over the Maryland Sheep and Wool weekend, kind of as a way to connect with the festival. Prior to finishing up the scouring of the fleece, I had let it just soak in a cold water soak for nearly a week. So not exactly a swint bath where the fiber is cleaned in its own swint, but it is enough to get the initial grease content out of the fiber with a minimal amount of effort. The other thing about that kind of cold water soak is that it is really great for watering young plants and new plantings. So I have since used all of that sheepy, stinky fleece water up on my plants. They love it. And then I just did like a simple scour and a rinse with that fiber and then let it dry. And then I put it through a small carder that I borrowed from Hope of Hope's Favorite Things. It did a beautiful job making gleaming white bats. I have 7 bats. I haven't weighed them, so I don't really know how much fiber is there, but it's enough to spin and think about either dyeing. This fleece would be ideal for dyeing because it's a very bright white after scouring. Another idea I had is that I could use it as one of the plies to combine with some of this combination spin fiber that I've been spindle spinning over the past months and even years. I have lots of little spindle spun minis of various different colors, fibers, fiber content, and maybe plying them with this very plain white Kerry Hill could be an idea. Or maybe even adding some mohair silk as a third ply and making a three-ply yarn that's a little bit more substantial. So I'm not sure. So far, these bats are just, they're just sitting in a beautiful basket waiting for me to spin. And we'll see how it goes from here. But it's really nice to have that processed and ready to go. As I hinted that I might in the last episode, I did use my beautiful hand-spun Lenore yarn to swatch for the Rib Wave sweater designed by Joanna Ang. I was aiming in my swatch for a gauge of 18 stitches and 25 and a half rows for 4 inches. My swatch knit on US 6 needles was exactly 18 stitches, and to get to 4 inches, it was 30 rows. So a little bit short on row gauge. Mary Beth said row gauge doesn't matter. Typically, I would agree with that because typically I don't concern myself very much with gauge, not enough to swatch anyway. The concern I have with this particular sweater and row gauge is that it has a V neckline. And if my row gauge was too loose, then the neckline starts to move south in a way that it doesn't retain the beauty of the sweater's design. In this case, I'm a little short, and I don't necessarily think that's a terrible thing because where it matters, like for the body of the sweater and the sleeves, I can always do another repeat or something like that. The neckline being too short, I don't know, it could be a concern. The other thing is, though, if I start knitting this sweater, I will know that right up front because I believe the pattern directions start with knitting the front and the neckline. So if I need to make an alteration there, I can rip out and redo that in a way that might make up for my row gauge. Another thing I could do is look at the next biggest size and what are the directions for that and how I might knit the front V in one size and then go back and knit the rest of the sweater in another size. So a little playing around, not the beautiful swatch information I had hoped for, but nevertheless, it is useful information. Another thing about the row gauge is that I'm measuring the row gauge of my little swatch. And when you've knit the whole sweater, you have the weight of the entire garment affecting your row gauge. And this is hand spun, so the weight is not inconsequential. Therefore, I may get close to making up for my row gauge with just the weight of the sweater hanging off the shoulders and kind of pulling the row gauge a little bit more into place. So I think my conclusion, although I'm going to sit on it for another week or so, is that I will purchase and begin knitting the Rib Wave sweater by Joanna Ang. I love the V-neck, I love the cable details, and I've also listened to the podcasters from Knitting a Good Yarn, I think, who have both knit this sweater for the test knit and raved about not only the finished product, but the joy they had in actually making the sweater. Like, it was a really engaging and interesting knit. And that interests me. So that's my thinking right now. And of course, I'll let you know how I do in the next episode. Another project that I've been working on is to hand stitch an Alabama Channon bolero and dress. I cut these out, I think, in July or August of 2023. I wanted a bolero and I wanted to make some adjustments to the style of dress that I have in a very short length or moderately short length. And I used as my fabric the absolutely beautiful organic soy knit that I get from the Confident Stitch in Montana. With a little bit different choice in colorways, I have kind of a khaki green and a dusty teal color. And I've done some fabric painting of a beautiful fern motif on the bolero sleeves for the jacket. And I'm working on stitching with those using some different reverse applique techniques, embroidery techniques, and also beading. So I want this jacket to be really a display of all of the different Alabama Channon style stitching techniques that I love. And it's just a wonderfully meditative and beautiful project. And I hope to be able to share it with folks who sign up for the reverse applique class as one of the samples. I'm not sure the direction I'm going with the dress. I may leave that quite plain. But what I do know is that I will be hand stitching the seams for this project. Before this, I have done machine stitching for seams of my Alabama Channon projects. And I would just really like to try, since I'm sinking into hand sewing more and more, try actually constructing the garment with hand sewing. So that will be sort of a skill set expansion for me. And I'm looking forward to getting the pieces of this bolero all embroidered, because I work on those flat and then I assemble and then bind the garment. It's probably a long-term project, somewhat long-term, but I'm really enjoying working on it. Ever-expanding skill sets. When my herb garden gets going in May and June, I really enjoy using some of the herbs to make simple syrups. I've talked about this before, and I've made so far mint syrup, basil syrup, sage syrup, and now I'm expanding to the gardens that I've been taking care of in Delaware Water Gap, which are sun-drenched. It's a very different type of gardening than what I do here in a more shady wooded area. And there is a substantial amount of milkweed growing in Delaware Water Gap. It kind of obscures the garden that's planted there in some ways, but I don't interfere with it because there's so little milkweed around and it's so important for supporting monarchs. When I was taking a very careful look at the milkweed on Friday, I discovered two monarch caterpillars on the milkweed. So that's super exciting. And I went through my Taproot magazines to find what I knew I had seen there, a recipe for milkweed simple syrup. If you have your Taproot issues, it is in issue 22, the grow issue of Taproot. And it gives not only the recipe, but also a cocktail idea. So I'll tell you about it briefly here because I think it would be so much fun for you to do. And I have had so much fun working on this milkweed simple syrup. It's a lot more elaborate than most of the syrups I make, which are pick a bunch of the herb, dissolve 1 cup of organic sugar in 1 cup of water. Once you bring that to the boil, throw in all of the herbs, remove it from the heat, and let it sit until the liquid cools, and then really press and strain, getting as much flavor as you can. The milkweed simple syrup directs you to pick the milkweed blossoms when they are glistening with nectar. Try to brush off any insects, but do not rinse or you'll rinse off the nectar. Combine the blossoms with sugar and then let that sit for 24 hours. And what happened is that the nectar starts coming out of the blossoms and starts turning the sugar to liquid right in the jar. Then after 24 hours, you put all of that in a pan and add water. Then bring it very gently to a simmer, dissolving all of the sugar that hasn't already been liquefied. You remove that from the heat and let that sit overnight. So there's really a lot of interaction with the blossoms and the sugar before you strain the liquid finally and you have your simple syrup that you can keep in the refrigerator for a couple of months. It is an absolute gorgeous pink color. And last night I made a cocktail and an NA cocktail with this simple syrup. It's called Butterfly Kisses, the cocktail. And I used 1 ounce of the simple syrup. And for Samuels, I use 1 ounce of vodka. Shook that over ice to get everything very, very cold. Poured in a coupe glass and then added some club soda. And it is a gorgeous, gorgeous pink, just the way the picture in Taproot magazine looks. The taste is sweet. It also has a nectar type flavor that's kind of similar to honeysuckle. But it also has a bit of a vegetal quality to it. It's very interesting. I think when I make this again, and I would like to make this again as the blossoms are maybe a little more full and open and nectar filled than they were the first time. When I make it again, I think I may cut just the blossoms. This will be a little bit time consuming, but really have less of the plant and more of the blossom when I clip them from, you know, these big blossom heads that I picked. And maybe that will cut down on the vegetal quality of the simple syrup and amp up the nectar-like quality. I'm not sure. But I think it's worth doing again because I intend to share this milkweed nectar simple syrup with friends and use it all up so that there will be cause to make another batch. And this milkweed patch is ample. So there are enough blossoms for insects and humans to be sharing. So that's the milkweed simple syrup from issue 22 of Taproot Magazine, the Grow issue. If you try it, let me know. Off the Shelf. For Off the Shelf this episode, I have a poem from a new-to-me American poet, Robin Becker. She was born in 1951 in Philadelphia, and she has taught at MIT, but now is a professor of English and Women's Studies at Penn State. And her poems reflect her Russian Jewish heritage, as well as her queer identity and her interest in art history and visual art. I think you get a lot of that, particularly the references to history in this poem, A History of Sexual Preference. We are walking our very public attraction through 18th century Philadelphia. I am simultaneously butch girlfriend and suburban child on a school trip. Independence Hall, 1775, home to the Second Continental Congress. Although she is wearing her leather jacket, although we have made love for the first time in a hotel room on Rittenhouse Square, I am preparing my teenage escape from Philadelphia. From Elfreth's Alley, the oldest continuously occupied residential street in the nation. From Carpenter's Hall, from Congress Hall, from Graff House, where the young Thomas Jefferson lived, summer of 1776. In my starched shirt and waistcoat, in my leggings and buckled shoes, in postmodern drag, as a young 18th century statesman, I am 17 and tired of fighting for freedom and the rights of men. I am already dreaming of Boston, city of women, demonstrations, and revolution on a grand and personal scale. Then the maitre d' is pulling out our chairs for brunch. We have the surprised look of people who have been kissing and now find themselves dressed and dining on a Locust Street townhouse-turned-café, who do not know each other very well, who continue with optimism to pursue relationship. Eternity may simply be our mortal default mechanism set on hope despite all evidence. In this mood, I roll up my shirt sleeves and she touches my elbow. I refuse the seedy view from the hotel window. I picture instead their silver inkstands, the hoop skirt factory on Arch Street, the wire works, their 18th century herb gardens, their 19th century row houses restored with period door knockers. Step outside. We have been deeded the largest landscaped space within a city anywhere in the world. In Fairmont Park, on horseback, among the ancient ginkgos, oaks, persimmons, and magnolias, we are 17 and imperishable. Cutting classes May of our senior year. And I am happy as the young Tom Jefferson, unbuttoning my collar, imagining his power, considering my healthy body, how I might use it in service of the country of my pleasure. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week and that it includes some time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.